Well, good morning, everyone. It's great to be with you for this next instalment in our series called Viral Good News Spreads Fast. We're making our way through Acts chapters 11 through 18. I wonder, have you ever started a new job or joined a gym or become a new member of a club of some kind, sporting club or local community activity, and if you just found, as you began to get to know people, there was always someone who had some kind of irrational, hateful attitude towards you. And you're a nice person. You can't kind of work out why that would be. You have no idea why they have such an attitude. How do you deal with something like that? You just rock up, you're being you, someone just clearly does not like you. You know, humans have a strange capacity, don't they, to get weird and worked up over people who get in their space. So this weekend alone, we've seen some irrational hatred by some footy fans on social media. That was terrible stuff. We see people in the news getting irrationally angry about having to wear a piece of cloth over their face when they go outside. We've even seen the President of the United States this weekend get irrationally angry. Well, actually, that's just a lot of the time, but that's a whole other matter. You know, in today's next instalment in the book of Acts, we're looking at the beginning of chapter 17, and it breaks up into three really neat parts of this short passage. And in this particular passage of the book of Acts, we get to see new arrivals who are met with irrational hatred. And we work out kind of what they do and how they respond. The passage, as I said, is Acts 17, verses 1 to 15. So let's begin in the first section, shall we, looking at verses 1 to 4 together. Paul and his companions, it says, then travelled through the towns of Amphipolis and Apollonia, and then they came to another town with a big name, Thessalonica, and there was a Jewish synagogue in that city. It says, as was Paul's custom, he went to the synagogue service, and for three Sabbaths in a row, he used the scriptures to reason with the people. He explained the prophecies and proved that the Messiah must suffer and rise from the dead. As we read on, Paul said, this Jesus I'm telling you about is the Messiah, or the Christ. Some of the Jewish people who listened were persuaded, and they joined Paul and Silas, along with many God-fearing Greek men and quite a few prominent women, we are told. So let's just think about what happened here. After leaving Philippi, you can look at last week's sermon to get the gist of what happened there. They came out under some duress, of course, Paul and his friends, and they moved southwest about 160 kilometres. You can see that up in the top left corner of the map that I've put on screen for you. Paul and his friends stayed true to the call of God that Paul had received in a dream, that he should go across into what we call Europe and spread the good news and bring help to people there. You can read about that back in Acts 16:9. They walked along what was called the Egnatian Way. It was a superhighway for trade and travel, connecting the great cities of the world across land and from port to port. And they took a couple of stops on the way as they were heading to this other city. They probably stopped in some good backpacker hotels on their journey before they reached the great capital of Macedon in those ancient days called Thessalonica. It's in northern Greece today, Thessaloniki. Now, this was a quite different city to the Roman garrison town of Philippi that they'd been in. For this was a free city in the Roman Empire. An important, thriving, multicultural marketplace. Pretty dynamic city. Now, Paul, it says, followed his usual custom and went first to the local synagogue. Now, this wouldn't have been a prominent building in the city necessarily. A synagogue in those days could be just a gathering of 10 men on the street. But there was some sort of structure around this. Paul knew where he had to go. He knew when the meetings were on. And, of course, this gave him an open mic every Saturday while he was there, because it was customary for synagogues to ask visiting rabbis to stand up in a synagogue meeting and share their views with the gathering in that city. Not an unusual thing at all. Quite appropriate for Paul to speak on this occasion. Luke's summary of what Paul said to the gathering is found in verse 3 in Acts 17. So you can have another look at that if you've got your Bible open and you're watching on right now. It's interesting because what Paul said, how Luke summarises it in the book of Acts, sounds just like what Jesus shared with his disciples after his resurrection, as you see it in Luke chapter 24. In short, Paul was joining the dots between what we call the prophets of the Old Testament and the events that had happened around Jesus' life, death and resurrection, and he pointed to Jesus as the one that's promised in the old prophets, the Messiah or the Christ. And he showed particularly in the cross that this was true. Now, all was going along swimmingly. A few people became Christians, and according to verse 4, many who were outsiders, who were not really allowed into the true synagogue membership but were listening on, if you like, they also became Christians. And we see again, consistent in the book of Acts, how radically inclusive the gospel of Jesus was in these days. Well, that's when things got pretty ugly. Paul's pushed further west following the call of God, and then here in the city of Thessalonica, as we read on in verses 5 to 9, we find that there's some people who just won't reason with Paul. In fact, they become terribly irrationally angry. Let's read on from verse 5. But some of the Jewish people were jealous, so they gathered some troublemakers from the marketplace to form a mob and to start a riot. They attacked the home of Jason, searching for Paul and Silas so they could drag them out to the crowd. They shouted, "Paul and Silas have caused trouble all over the world, and now they are here disturbing our city too. And Jason has welcomed them into his home. They are all guilty of treason against Caesar, for they profess allegiance to another king named Jesus." Let's take a closer look at these irrationally angry ones in the city of Thessalonica just for a moment. Verse 5 tells us, first off, they were jealous. Turns out some people actually liked Paul and his message, and this was perceived to some in the gathering, it seems, as a threat. Some of the Jewish people of that space and that city, they just didn't like him or his message. There's something going on there, and they turn on him really violently. Verse 6 tells us they claimed Paul and Silas were troublemakers, along with some guy that was called Jason. And everyone must have known when Luke was writing who Jason was, right? Now, that seems a bit rich, calling them troublemakers, coming from people who then hire a mob of troublemakers to make trouble. But, of course, the original Greek here, if you look at verse 6, and look at it in some different translations, maybe, if you've got that facility, it helps us to see that it was a claim, not that they were just rebel rousers or something, but that Paul and Silas were creating a social revolution with their gospel. That's what was so upsetting. Those who were hating on Paul hated the thought, it seems, that outsiders were being radically included by God in the way he interpreted the scriptures of old when he was talking about Jesus as the Christ. And then in verse 7, we see that they doubled down on their irrational hatred, this mob. It's like they tweeted in that city that Christians were hurting the Bible and hurting God. Now, in this case, by Bible, I mean their exclusive views as haters, and by God, I mean the emperor of Rome at the time, who they had no regard for anyway, the Caesar. And then there's this claim of treason in relation to Caesar. And it's such a trumped up charge, if you pardon the pun. After all, Christ's kingship, we know in the Gospels, was marked by humility and submission. And as we read in Paul's letters, his own teaching about Christ and king, as king, was characterised in the same way, humility and submission. That's hardly treacherous, treasonous. So in one city, it seems, we see anger when the gospel is presented. And as we read on, in another city, a completely different response altogether, with the same process undertaken. So here's what happened. A deal was done with Jason and his friends to make sure Paul and Silas would never return to Thessalonica again. Paul does get to write letters, which you can find in the New Testament. So Paul and Silas hit the road, this time off the main highway, walking about 70 kilometres south to a city called Berea. And this was a small Hellenistic city with some Jewish people living there, just north of Mount Olympus. Let's pick up the action in verse 10. When they arrived in Berea, they went to the Jewish synagogue. You can see that customary practice of Paul again. And the people of Berea were more open-minded than those in Thessalonica. Some translations will say were of more noble character. And they listened eagerly to Paul's message. They searched the scriptures day after day to see if Paul and Silas were teaching the truth. As a result, many Jews believed, and so did many of the prominent Greek women and men. Now, it's not just the nationality of Greece that's mentioned by Greek here in the New Testament. It's talking about people of the other nations, the non-Jewish people in that gathering. So in contrast to some at Thessalonica, in the city beforehand, Luke says it was in the nature of these Bereans to explore and to reason with people's ideas and beliefs. A whole different kind of character and culture in that city. A noble trait, Luke calls it. I remember visiting ruins of some of the ancient cities in western Turkey, then back then Asia Minor. It was fascinating to move 5 or 10 kilometres from site to site and see evidence of quite different regard for minorities. In some cities, Jews and Christians could have market stalls alongside the people of the Roman Empire with no trouble. In other cities, they had to live right on the outskirts of the city and be totally marginalised and have very little movement or freedom. Different cities, different types of people, different responses to the gospel of God. And do you notice here in the text that Paul's approach, as he shares his ideas, was to lay out his views alongside a common text that the people he was meeting with were studying. And then he would encourage dialogue to follow the views that he shared. So if you like, they'd open the Old Testament together, which was already on the agenda at the synagogue. They'd look at what it promised and prophesied. Paul would proclaim what his views were in relation to Jesus, and then he would encourage dialogue. He was open to question in the following days as they discussed together. And these were people who were into that. They wanted to reason with Paul, find out more about what he said. Have a look at verse 12 then of Acts 17. It says, many of the Jewish people this time, not just a few, became Christians. And so too did many people of other diverse backgrounds, including again a mention of prominent women, people who had freedoms and power in the city's systems. This was women, people from other nationalities, other backgrounds and status, things that we've been studying in this book of Acts as a wonderful outcome of the freedoms and welcome of the gospel of Jesus. But guess what happens next, of course? If you're reading on, the irrationally angry, jealous mob who were back in Thessalonica, they get wind of what's happening in Berea and they make it their business. So they head off down the same road, get to Berea, wanting to cause more trouble and upset everything Paul and Silas are doing. So the locals there whisk Paul away to Athens to safety, and Silas and Timothy must lay low and they stay on in Berea to help the new church get established, we presume. Well, here's a good question. Why is this passage even in the Bible? Why is it here? So what? Well, I think for me, I wanted to say there are some really interesting connections with what we heard in the parable of the sower that was read to us from Matthew chapter 13. You can look in Luke chapter 8 as well. That is to say, the events of Acts 17 we've just been looking at ring true to what Jesus taught as a pattern of the gospel being made known in the world. He talks about it in that story of a sower, a farmer. And the outcomes of that ring true in the Acts 17 passage. Some people are going to get really excited and really love what you have to say when you share the good news of Jesus. Some people will just be indifferent to the message of the gospel. Other people perhaps are going to pick and choose what they like, but they may not hang around afterwards. And then others will get really, really antsy about what they hear you say. It is what it is. The second thing we kind of learn from this is that the gospel offers a freedom and welcome. We've been studying this right through the book of Acts. You can look at the kind of background, the type of people who become Christians in this period. One example there on screen, Colossians 3. Sometimes people get irrationally angry around Christians, don't they? Well, sometimes it's warranted, partly because ministers and evangelists like me can be real jerks sometimes, and we can actually put people off by talking down to them and just pumping out a message with no openness to be questioned or no intention for dialogue. Well, that's ironic. That's kind of what I'm doing today. No, actually, I want to encourage you to engage in some dialogue. You can use the comments section. Send me an email anytime to contend with what you're reading in the scriptures or ask questions or tell me your views. But yes, sometimes evangelists are the ones who put us off. They just have an approach that's totally unlike what Paul and Silas were doing back then. But often, like in the circumstances we see in Acts 17, there's just some irrational anger that arises when people find out the gospel is not just a private spiritual ideology, but instead it's the grounds for a social revolution. You see, the gospel of Jesus shifts the balance of power in the receiver, in the community into which it's spoken. It upsets the status quo whenever it's properly preached. The gospel welcomes outsiders into the inner circle through the cleansing, gracious love of Jesus Christ poured out for us upon the cross. When people find this out, there's all that great variety of reactions that comes with it. But I want to say today, you know what? If you're a person who longs to see the marginalised people of the world welcomed and included in the centre of life, despite their race, despite their low status, despite their gender or sexuality, despite any particular background that's different to yours, if you long to see those people welcomed and included in community, then you're going to love the gospel of Jesus. And you're going to want to explore it and find out more about it. Equally, if you're a person who's tired of the way society insists that you should continue to climb over people up the social ladder of importance, or that you should endlessly acquire products and just keep amassing possessions to keep the economy running, if this is distasteful or disturbing to you, then you're going to love the gospel of Jesus. You're going to want to investigate it more and more, because it has an upside down set of values that really have a bias to the marginalised and the poor. If you're a person whose self-awareness already tells you that you can't do life on your own, that in fact your own competence is limited, and that to navigate this complex life that we have, you need wisdom from above. If you're a person like that, you're going to love the gospel of Jesus. You're going to respond positively. You're going to want to hear everything that the speaker has to say about Jesus and his gospel. So some will and some won't respond positively, that is. But let me tell you for sure, the gospel is a gospel that offers freedom and welcome, particularly to those who are often considered outsiders. And lastly, we as the Christian sharing the good news of Jesus in the world today should, like Paul and Silas, be open to question. Acts 17 really challenges people like me and you who are sharers of the gospel in the world just by our living and our words and our actions, or maybe as professional ministers like me. We should be open to question and dialogue about the beliefs that we have, just as Paul was. Because we too can take opportunities to share our thoughts on topics that people find really important right now. Common texts, if you like, with our neighbours. Our point of view of the radical gospel of Jesus on topics like climate action, how we should treat refugees in our world, of which there are so many more right now than ever before. How we should go about aid and relief and what we as a nation really might think about from our privileged point of view. Matters of reconciliation with Indigenous people. What does the gospel bring to bear on that? We can share that with people who already find that an important topic. About peaceful relationships in family and community. Where do you find that? Well, what's your view as a Christian? You tell me yours. Those are quite legitimate, open conversations to have with our friends. And we can talk about what it means to us in the light of being a Christian. As you know, Jesus promised this to be true. Some people will want to engage in dialogue and explore the matter further and find out why you believe what you believe and if there's more to know. Others may respond completely differently. Others may reject it altogether and not be too happy with you. But you know what has to happen is that, like Paul and Silas, we as Christians must be marked by humility, love, and openness in the way we go about talking about what we believe or acting in a way that shows that Jesus is our King and Lord. So there's my contribution today from a short passage of scripture in Acts. Let's be clear. Some people will, some people won't respond well to hearing the good news of Jesus. But let's remember it's a gospel that's radical. It offers freedom and welcome, particularly to outsiders. That won't make everyone happy. And lastly, let's be marked by humility, love, and openness. An openness to being questioned, to dialogue, to engagement, to travelling with people in their journey of faith too. God bless you this week ahead.